Welcome back to Screen Crush Rewind. I am your host, Ryan Airy, and today we're talking about the movie of my dreams, Masters of the Universe. This movie is the exact film that I wanted to see more than anything in the world when I was 5 years old. And now we have it, and we're going to talk about our thoughts on it. We got a couple of regulars and a special guest we're going to bring on in a second. So we're going to talk about the film, and we're going to talk about why the hell it didn't perform well at the box office. I think it might be an indicator of franchise fatigue. Now, some of you have pointed out in the chat, by the way, super chats are always encouraged but not required. Some of you have already pointed out that it got beaten by Scary Movie 6, which is technically a franchise, but I kind of think it's one of those franchises where you're not going to really check in on your favorite characters from the Scary Movie franchise. You're just going to see a comedy that you can ignore and forget about a week later. So anyways, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about underperforming franchises across the board from Marvel, Fast and the Furious, Mission Impossible, etc. And as always, let us know down in the comments what you think, and we'll get to those as we go along. And I want to remind you guys that our store memberships are currently live at our $5 tier. You get 50% off our merch store. We've been uploading videos that are just for members only, and we're going to do our X-Men 2 watch party coming up soon. Actually, we should ask one of our guests if he wants to do that, because I know he's a huge fan of that movie. But first, let's bring on, you know, the old regulars here, the guy who's always on break, Mr. Tommy Bechtold. What's up, Tommy?
Janet, I won't say it again. I've told you my origin. I'm a prince from another universe that was sent here with my magical sword, and that's why I must have weapons in my office at all times. Ryan, how are you?
I'm great, man. You know what? That's as good of an excuse as any I've heard to bring firepower and laser guns into the office. I think as long as you don't dress like He-Man in the office, that's a bridge too far for most HR. As long as you like leave the grass green home.
I do love a good harness.
So I hear. By the way, we missed you at the club last week. And also coming on, you know him as the guy who's trapped in our TV but doesn't know it. So please don't tell him, Mr. Colton Ogburn. What's up, Colton?
Hey, look, I know I'm a regular, but I'm special as well. I mean, regular is special.
You haven't been on that much lately. We've been missing you.
That's true. Yeah, because I still haven't seen Spider-Noir, and I'm extremely embarrassed
by
that.
Okay.
You know what I did
watch?
Kid. Yeah, you know what I did watch over the weekend? The sequel to The Handmaid's Tale, The Testaments. It's actually really good. The girl from One Battle After Another is in it. It's actually quite good. Recommend it.
Yeah. I mean, so is The Handmaid's Tale. Although at a certain season, I stopped watching The Handmaid's Tale just because it's a hard watch.
I was about to
say, you know, it's really tough.
The Testaments is not as hard of a watch, I will say, because I agree with you. Like, you have to be in a certain mood to get through Handmaid's Tale, and you do not feel good watching that show. This show is actually kind of, it like takes place after the war and stuff, so things are a little more hopeful. Anyway.
Oh, the war ends. Didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. But no, it's,
No. It's still going on. No, it's still going.
Spoiler alerts for The Handmaid's Tale are ahead.
I should have said battle. It takes place after the big battle.
I don't know. I don't care. It's fine. Yeah. I assumed that they weren't going to end the show.
Ryan roots for Gilead, as does Tommy.
I do. Yeah. I actually have my proud member of Gilead badge that I keep on the inside of my shirt. Like, if you flip this over, that's what it says.
I invite everyone to watch mine and Ryan's podcast, Gilead Guys, which is a Gilmore Girls themed pro masculinity podcast.
Yeah, we go around the streets of New Haven into coffee shops and we yell at people for being diverse. And coming up, we've got our special guest for the week. I've been trying to nail this guy down for a long time. He hosts one of my all-time favorite YouTube channels and one of my all-time favorite podcasts, mostly nitpicking. You know him as Nando from Nando V Movies. What's going on,
Hi.
Nando?
What's going on? I just want to, you know, having not watched any of that Handmaid's Tale show, I just want to guess that an excursion is different from a war, is different from a battle, you know, in our current times. Nothing really can be pinned down to any specific kind of thing. That way no one's ever in trouble. So
there's a ceasefire.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Nando's channel. It's absolutely great. He does great theory videos where one of my favorites is your Deadpool 3 video where you came up with your own plot for Deadpool 3 that involved Mojo. And I like it so much more than the actual one. But you do these great rewrites of movies, and then these other great theory videos is how I first found your channel. I'm just plugging the hell out of Nando because I love
thank
your
you,
stuff.
Thank you.
It's some of the best in our field. It really is.
I just want to say it's an honor to be on with you because for years I've been called the not as good Nando V movies. I've got that comment a few times.
Have you guys
good to know?
No, I'm just
person
a big fan.
Exists with that name going out here and like,
The very first time Nando came on was actually you were on our very first video like this. It wasn't a live stream, but it was me, you, and Patrick. And you dropped a little theory that Sony, it was only a matter of time before they made a Man-Wolf movie. And that's never left my brain because they never have. And I thought Man-Wolf was one of the few things they could have done from the Spider-Man IP. It makes sense. Astronaut goes to the moon, turns into a wolf. It could be anything.
That's a good point. Yeah, there's still time. And I haven't finished, you know, the Spider-Man TV show, so maybe it shows up in that. I'm doubtful, but you never know.
Wait, the new one or the one from the 70s? Which Spider-Man TV show are we talking about?
The Amazon Spider-Noir. I am one episode from being done. So I like to take my time with streaming releases.
It's so good, and I agree. I had to watch it, like, really fast for this. You know, I host the show here on YouTube. And I had to do it for that, and it wasn't as much fun. And then I get to go back and rewatch it in black and white with my wife. Which is
can I say while we're glazing, that's something I really have – sorry, I'm fanboying a little bit. That's what I've always liked about your channel, Nando, is you don't feel the need, at least from what I've noticed, like – it'll be like a week or two after everyone else is talking about it, and, like, you'll drop and have your really interesting take on it. I'm like – he really took his time to like put some thoughts together. I'm like, guys,
I like to like throw out immediate like theories or thoughts too. But yeah, especially with these, you know, everything goes on streaming in 1 week. It feels so, you know, just feels so ephemeral. You need to have time to think about it, even if it doesn't necessarily need to be watched over the course of the week. I feel like it takes a week to process how you feel about a certain thing.
Completely agree.
But that's really smart because the people who are watching your channel are probably not watching in 1 day either. We used to get ridiculous with this. Like we would get screeners for like, I remember the first season of Sandman, and then Paul from Heavy Spoilers and I were in this like weird Cold War where we were like waiting to see who was going to drop their video first. And we would drop the next one like right after or right before. And because we knew it was ridiculous. We knew that like no one's going to watch all 8 episodes in 2 hours. And the minority of people who would go, I'm not going to watch that. What happens at the ending would be like 4 views. So I really respect what you do, like Colton said.
It's great to take time. And sometimes, you know, like with the Wonder Man video that I'm going to make sometime in the next 8 years, you know, like leave people wanting something. And then it really gets exciting. But
we've got a Captain America Civil War breakdown that should come out sometime in 2028. I am so excited about it. It's one of my favorite videos I've written. And it's like literally a couple sentences a week at this point. Let's talk about the movie. Let's talk about MOTU. Now, I will say this ahead of time. Tommy, you weren't able to finish watching it, but you saw about half. So
I
that's
saw
okay.
about half. My dog was sick this weekend, and I thought I could leave him to go to see a movie. And halfway through the movie, I just imagined all these catastrophic things happening to my dog.
Been there.
So I ran home, and then one visit to the emergency vet later, he's got an ear infection and a distressed digestive system, but he's no life-threatening conditions. So he'll be okay. But it was it was a tough weekend.
Wednesday night, I've been there, and Wednesday night I was supposed to go see it, but Doug was having a reaction from a vaccine, and he was like trembling, and he wouldn't eat. And for Doug to not eat is like drastic change in personality. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see it then either. Like I was,
I had
to. I feel you, man.
Blast! I got my mom. Yeah. I got my mom to keep the baby. I didn't think about that
fucking forever.
No. I did see the movie, and I really like it. So let's go around the table, Tommy. If you want to offer your thoughts on the first hour, you can. But like, let's start with Nando, buddy. What do you think about? What do you think of the movie?
I think this is as good as a movie that is the Masters of the Universe can possibly be. Without like, I'm sure there's some things you could tweak to make it better. But just in terms of like. How much, and as someone who is not an enormous fan of the franchise, but like I like it more than like other franchises that I'm not like really connected to, because I think I kind of missed out on in both windows of like being around for the original run of the toys in the show and then being around for like the kind of revival versions of them. But either way, I thought it was a lot of fun, and I wish it was the most successful movie ever because I'd like to see like 10 more of these because I think they're pretty cool.
And She-Ra. That She-Ra team.
We love She-Ra. Yeah. There's so many guys that when you Google it and it's like, this is a different guy that you didn't even know existed. Like they're friends and villains. Like I want to see all of them on screen, but maybe we'll get to that. It's going to be tricky.
Not to mention, there's so many other He-Man characters that aren't in this, like Stinkor. Yeah. They all have or man at the end of their name. But there's a lot of really cool bits of lore that I would love to see further explored. And on Emergency Awesome's video, he said he thinks they'll make a sequel for half the money and put it straight on streaming. And I think he's probably right. Colton, apart from like not having to being able to pretend like you're not a father for 2 hours, what were your thoughts on the movie?
Dude, look, it's really hard being me, right? Being all of us.
we all say that, yeah.
There is that side of my brain that wants to just sit back and watch the movie. But then there's the other side of me, as I'm sure all of you can relate, that I immediately start rewriting the movie the second I get out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they should have done this, should have done that. But Ryan, I was telling you this offline, is that what kept coming back to me was Mark Hamill doing that impression of Harrison Ford, where he goes, kid, it's not that kind of movie. And that's what I kept trying to tell myself. Because, look, I do think a Masters of the Universe movie can be goofy and self-referential and meta and be everything it was here. But I think it can also be Lord of the Rings meets Star Wars and be like this epic saga type franchise for today. I feel like that it felt more like Diet Thor Ragnarok than it did like this epic Masters of the Universe thing.
I just
had like little notes, like it felt like no time passed whatsoever and nothing of consequence happened when he landed. Oh, sorry. I'm getting some kind of feedback.
So. Yeah, I am too. I don't know who's in that is. About to say.
We can do the mute rotation.
I don't know.
I muted Tommy and I don't hear it anymore.
All right.
Maybe Tommy, that might have been on your end, but keep going, Colton. Sorry.
It felt like when Adam landed, or I'll be like long neck guy, Alan. It felt like when Adam landed on Earth, and then they say 15 years later. I just felt like his character didn't change at all. There was nothing interesting of like him, like almost reaching this point where maybe he finally started to doubt the fact that he is from another planet. I expected that
in the third act.
Yeah. I would have liked to see him like talking to a psychiatrist or something and maybe finally coming to grips with, okay, maybe something traumatic did happen in my childhood and I'm just kind of crazy. And then have Tila and like, you know, Masters of the Universe, everybody come and get him, take him back to Eternia. I just think they kind of blew past and rushed through. It felt like there was no character development for him or any of the other characters that were remaining on Eternia. It felt like time just kind of stood still so they could just age up the character and have him come right back.
Well,
and
we don't even know their real names on Eternia for the most part. It's just the names they gave him as a kid. Yeah.
And like, there's a line where it's Tila, right? I'm not huge on the original either. Tila says, and what'd you call that guy? I'm like, what do you mean that guy? You don't know his name? She should be like, and what did you call John? You know, she should, they've been hiding in just little shit like that. And I don't know. I just felt like they kind of blew past a lot of important stuff that would have made the rest of the movie feel better. Like it feel more impactful. And like, I'd actually care a little more. It just felt a little shallow, but again, kid, it's not that kind of movie. So I don't know.
Well, but no, you raise a good point, because during that third act, sorry, Tommy, we'll get to your half opinion in a second. During that third act, I did have the same thought when he's in He-Man's mind, that it seemed like Skeletor was trying to convince him of this. Oh, it was all fake, blah, blah, blah. And he doing the silly thing where he appears and is dressed as the guy, the boss from Office Space. He's going through all that. And I did think at that point, like, you know, he hasn't expressed any doubt in himself. But one thing I did love about the movie is how that's his real power, like his childlike optimism and belief, and is how he's able to inspire everybody later in the film. Like he's able, they take his dumb, goofy speech and his dumb, goofy names, and it actually propels them forward, which I loved.
Yeah. Well, can I just say one more thing? I know I'm talking a lot. Sorry.
Please, man. Go.
Little, like, usually I'm the type of guy that, like, I hate when a Thor movie or whatever, or a Transformers movie feels the need to take place on Earth and have, like, a lot of human characters and stuff. So I really appreciated that this movie, the bulk of it took place on Eternia. In fact, when I saw that they were even having part of it take place on Earth in the trailers, I was like, oh, boo. We don't need He-Man's origin. Just do Masters of the Universe.
The Masters of the Universe 1987 movie that we were so jazzed for when I was seven was the biggest disappointment, because it starts with a giant Eternia set. It starts with all these people from the movie, the cartoon. You think that's what you're getting, And then they go to Earth. Yeah. So Courtney Cox and Tom Paris, you know, can fuck around for half of the movie.
Yeah.
Half of the screen time belongs to those two teenage characters.
So that's not what I wanted at all. So I'm glad that they're on Eternia for a lot of it. But I do feel like an extra 10 minutes on Earth really would have set up the rest of the movie and served it well. Because, again, it just felt like, I don't know, like I just know nothing about, like, who were his parents? Was he in foster care? Did he have Earth parents? Mm-hmm. Did somebody find him? Like, they just kind of bypass all of that. It really just feels like he landed on Earth. And then everybody just stood still for 15 years until the rest of the movie could start. It was weird. Yeah.
Second movie this year where that guy, I forget his name, the actor plays an orphan. The other one's The Sheep Detectives, which is genuinely a much better movie that everybody should see. It's so great. Tommy, I got my thoughts, but I want to hear from you first. You've been very polite. Thank you.
Well, I'll give my half-baked thoughts. So my love for He-Man is, I think, maybe a little more unconventional. I wasn't like a huge fan of the He-Man cartoon. Like, the toys were it for me. Mm-hmm. My like love for He-Man is like the world I created with those toys based on their names only. So I deeply loved how this movie was paced because I wanted them off of Earth as soon as possible, back with my toys. Like, and so, and I understand, and I think Colton's point is completely valid, is like a cinematic theatrical experience and a story. But as a viewer, I was kind of like, yeah, who cares about all this? Get him his sword and get him back to Eternios as soon as possible. And like, and that worked for me. And I thought that visually and with the score that was provided, that was like with collaboration from Queen and all that, I just really enjoying myself. If I wasn't so worried that my dog was lying in a ditch somewhere, I probably would have walked away from it. And eventually had those similar thoughts of like, they might have been able to explain why this, like, you know, ripped kid is like so insecure and like talks about this alien planet for the first week. I also love that they tried to hide the fact that he was muscular under
that
shirt.
Like bulky shirts.
I'm starting to work out for the first time. I'm like, okay. And then even they transform his body, when he transforms the first time, they CGI him to be skinny.
Yes.
They go to the Steve Rogers thing. But
My dumbass leans over to my wife. You see, he's actually muscular. They CGI'd the dad.
They could have done more things like digitally to make him look smaller, but kid, it's not that kind of movie. Like you have to suspend a lot of disbelief with this. My thought was I'm pretty sure this movie got greenlit because of Barbie. They're both Mattel properties, and I'm sure they would love to have like a toy cinematic universe with Polly Pocket and shit like that. So I was excited about it as a He-Man fan. I knew they were like approaching it from a certain meta level, the same way Barbie did, which is why I liked Fisto and Ram Man. Those are really dumb names, and they explain why they have those names. Because the other option is to wholeheartedly embrace that camp and like really own it. The part where they finally get everybody together, they break out of prison, they're walking down they're doing the hallway walk. We've seen it a million times, Guardians, Kill Bill, whatever. They're playing Queen. It's awesome. But then they stop and do a gag where they all cough. I hated that on like every level you can hate something. I am so tired of movies and franchises trying to be James Gunn or Marvel and undermine the moment with a joke. I'm tired of Marvel doing it, you know, like just enjoy. You built to this moment. You built to this rally point. Soak in the rally point for a little bit. And then you can do more jokey stuff later. Like if it were a letter grade, I think it dropped it a whole letter for me because that was indicative of what I saw all through the movie. The only other way to do, I was thinking about this too. The only other way to do a spin on He-Man would be, if you think about it, guys, it's pretty fucked up. It's this kid, Adam, young prince, who suddenly gets the power to be a super macho dude. In the real world, that would go horrible if you took a 13-year-old boy and you gave him that kind of power. And it would be a dark, almost like Miracle Man kind of story. But other than that, I don't know. Nando, what do you think of the meta-ness of it? Did it work for you?
It's tricky because on one hand, like I'm sure there were some jokes. Well, I don't know. It doesn't feel like there were too many jokes that went over my head as a non-huge He-Man fan, but I am like pretty familiar with the idea of it. I think as a way to have the silliness of the characters and the designs of the characters and all of that, And I think like there's certain characters like Fisto, right, who like feel very kind of, he does feel like they took a action figure put it through like a cool guy filter. But then there's guys like Mechaneck who don't feel like that, who feel like they just took the action figure and brought him into real life. So like, I feel like as an attempt to take the idea of these toys and kind of contextualize them as being things that this guy remembers, and that's why you kind of remember them the same way, I thought it was all very clever. I think I do kind of agree with Colton a little bit, now that I'm thinking about it, that there could have been more time on Earth. I think you could have maybe cut it in with stuff in Eternia as maybe memories or something like that, so it doesn't get super slow, because it starts with the narration on the date, and that's fine. I think that's smart, because it does need to kind of, parts of it helps if are explained. But and I don't necessarily need to see him go on like 4 or 5 dates, but I feel like maybe, I don't know, flashbacks or dreams or something like that he has for memories could keep that first bit moving a little better. But yeah, I think as far as a way to kind of keep the childy toyness of these guys together with the reality of guys that can do a big punch and stuff on screen and not look silly. I mean, they look kind of silly. I think they did a pretty decent job. And as far as like little kind of Joss Whedon jokes, I don't love them, but I will usually excuse a joke. I'm usually pretty, unless the joke is like mean spirited or something, I'm usually pretty forgiving when it comes to like jokes for me that don't work, if they work in the theater, and my theater thought that was very funny. So I was right there with them, and my theater was packed, like, because I saw it on one of those opening night or like things like that. So I probably did have a kind of, what's the word, like a sweet crowd as far as people that were ready to laugh at that. But I also think people, you know, people just dug it.
Hey, was your crowd, I'm curious about this, was your crowd guys in their 40s? Or was it like a lot of younger people?
It was a lot of guys in their 40s and their kids in their 12s or whatever. Like a lot of both of those, together.
I thought that was going to propel it, because like He-Man as a franchise was so big, but only for a few years in the 80s. Like around eight, like when the movie came out, the live action is right when it like abruptly dropped off a cliff. But for those of us who were there, it was like seminal. You know, that the other thing in the movie, I kept thinking, why aren't they playing the theme? He-Man has this amazing theme every time he would transform. They played it 100 times in every episode. And then when they finally played it at the end, like that got me like straight in the feels. And I was like ready. And I wanted that moment earlier in the movie. But that could just be me loving that theme.
I think you're spot on about the flashbacks. That would have been a great way to do it without bogging down the first act. And the perfect place to have put them would have been during that sequence where the movie just like comes to this complete stop in those red woods or whatever, where they're having, where it's Man at Arms and Tila and Adam. I think that would have been a good place to actually have him give some like catch up exposition that would have flowed really well and taken us into that third act and given me all that information I wanted to have to better enjoy the third act. So yeah, I think that would have been a good place to do it.
Skeletor work for you guys as a villain? Oh, sorry, Matt, finish your thought.
I was just going to say, now that you mentioned it, and now that we're kind of talking about it, and like the way that the characters are kind of versions of characters that exist in his mind, I almost wish, and they couldn't, well, they could have done this, but this is kind of a different version of this movie. I wish the first bit we saw was animated and it looked nothing like the real guys. And it was clearly the version that he remembers that he drew.
Yeah.
And then when we saw them in real life, they look like the guys that they are. But anyway, Skeletor, cool. Okay. Two things about Skeletor. One, it feels like a take on the Frank Langella Skeletor, not any other version of Skeletor, because of the voice. That's not a Skeletor voice outside of that performance that I could recognize.
Yeah, even Mark Hamill, when he did it, adapted it more. I mean, he basically did a version of the Joker, but it was more of a version from the He-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you guys ever have a chance to watch those Skeletor Insult supercuts, they're amazing. Gratuitous boob.
My favorite Skeletor lines are actually from Robot Chicken, and my wife and I quote them to each other all the time. Like the what?
Behold the gaseous stench of Skeletor's breakfast burrito. Oh, in the car. That was a good one.
That was a good one.
All the other
I'm not evil, Lynn. I will be good, Lynn. This whole time I thought your name was Evelyn. Pretty clever, huh? No.
just a reminder, So I'm curious why this movie bombed. But just before we get into that, I want to talk about, just want to show you guys real quick. We do have a couple of merch, parody merch shirts. We got this Grayskull Gym in the style of Gold Gym that we really love. We're proud of at our merch store,
screencrushmerch.com.
Mm. You can get it. Just give us your size and we'll get one sent to you. And we've also got the I Have the Power shirt, which it really, like I said, that's the moment that always jazzed me up every time I watched He-Man. And yeah, these are available at our merch store. And if you become a store member, at just our $5 tier, you get 15% off our merch store, along with other things like monthly watch parties, exclusive videos, etc. And at the $100 tier, if you're game for that sort of nonsense, we do a private Q&A live stream. We had our first one the other day. It was a lot of fun. I live streamed people. I showed around the studio and, you know, kind of get behind the scenes and just answer questions. I got to talk about myself for 30 minutes. It's amazing. So, yeah, links for those and everything else are down below.
I'm really tired. Going back to your question, I'm really tired of them taking villains that are supposed to have the like the high pitch thing like Carnage is supposed to giving them the stink, and they kind of did that with Skeletor a little bit, and I didn't think his voice was awful. Like, they could have gone like way worse, but I would have preferred a little bit more of a high pitch, like have Mark Hamill do it maybe. I think that
I think like it feels unnecessary to make give him more gravitas in his voice when the movie is already that ridiculous, right? If there's ever a live action movie that can get away with a villain with a silly voice, it's this one. Like, there's literally no reason not to have him have the cartoon voice. And I hate to say it because, by all accounts, he doesn't seem like a very good person. Jared Leto probably could have killed that. Like, you know, like
he did good. He understood the assignment. You're right. A crescendo. Well, he didn't say it like that, but that's how I remember it in my head.
Ryan, I sent Ryan a video of me puppeteering my child. That's the crescendo.
One of the best things about having a baby is making them do stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Totally with you on it.
Yeah. So, what's this? Oh, I'm sorry. Do you guys know this drama about Leto not being happy with the film or something? I've just seen little bits and pieces of that.
Well, they kept him off the press tour. And I was wondering if that was because of just Jared Leto being box office poison at this point.
I'm wondering if they signed him onto this and couldn't get him off of it. Like, because, you know, like before they filmed it or something.
Oh, after Tron. They went
to
a world where he thinks he did fine in this movie or whatever. But because he's so toxic for all of the different reasons of like the Tron movies didn't work, and like all the like Tron and what was the other one, Haunted Mansion, all that kind of bombed in the immediate wake of all of his other things that came out about him. Yeah, I feel like they could have been like, hey, you can't talk about this movie at all, like just stay away from it. And maybe that made him go like, I'm not into it, like this isn't fun for me to talk about to random kids on an airplane. But like, I could see a world where in reality he seemed to be into it. Like, everything I've heard on behind the scenes, he put stupid blood on his face or something. Like, he got excited about this role. He was there.
Yeah, but that's suit, he always does that shit. Like, when he was the Joker and he put rats in people's locker. What's this airplane thing?
I saw a video, or not video, I saw a report that one guy, I think they said they were at an airport with him and they happened to be a big He-Man fan. They were like wearing a He-Man shirt and they said to him, like, hey, I already saw that Master of the Universe movie you were in. That was great. And he's like, oh, cool, thanks. And then left. And that's like the most reaction it feels like we've gotten from him about that movie in that moment. So like if I was him and like was in that situation and, you know, all of the discourse around me was I'm going to destroy this movie because he kind of, you know, is a liability in a lot of ways. I feel like I also wouldn't want to talk about it. I'd want to talk about my band or whatever it is that he's happy about.
I don't think anyone knows, you know, except for us, really, like our circle, that he's even playing Skeletor. Yeah. So that's probably
they didn't even have a flashback of his, like, because he was, long story short, he's King Randor's brother, Keldor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. First appearance in the Search for Keldor comic.
I'm Skeletor.
Anyways, they could have done all that, and then maybe they even had that in the script, but I feel like they're. You mentioned like maybe there was more on Earth and deleted scenes or something. I feel like the movie's 2 hours. I don't think there was much else. I am interested in why it bombed, because when the first trailer dropped, we did something we've only done a couple times where I did a live breakdown. I pulled some stills. And for like a live video that I droned on for 30 minutes about this, fan geeking about this shit, it did pretty well. Got like almost 200,000 views. So I thought, okay, there must be a lot of interest here.
That's great for a live stream.
Yeah, right. And it's going to be, I think the movie's going to do really well on streaming. And I thought guys my age who, you know, were burned by the Dolph Lundgren movie were going to be jazzed about this. But then again, they've tried He-Man revivals over the years in the early 2000s. Great revival. There was the Motu and Revelation and Revolution on Netflix, which I think one of them only got a 52% from fans. But I love that one, too. Like, but then none of them really captured the zeitgeist like those 4 years or 3 years in the 1980s did. There have been three revivals since then, and none of them have really taken off.
People so don't go to the movies anymore. I think a lot of people are going to watch it on streaming. They're probably just waiting.
But that's a great point, because you look at the competition they had, and this is where I'm really curious to hear what you guys think, because I haven't seen any of these movies yet. Their competition was Backrooms, Obsession, which has gone up 3 weeks in a row, which is like Titanic kind of like momentum. And Amazing Digital Circus, and those three have a YouTube presence. They're made by people with big social media reaches. They have an organic audience. That Digital Circus show, I didn't realize their top viewed video has like 400 million views.
Yeah, I don't even
know. Or something like that. Like, it's ridiculous in a good way. Like, I'm really happy for them. So is that the reason why? But I kind of feel like maybe the kids they were hoping to attract to this movie, maybe I thought they would have at least bought tickets to it and snuck into back rooms, but I think that they watched other shit. I mean, what do you guys think about the competition aspect?
I mean, I think the competition. Sorry, Nando.
Oh, go on. Ahead. Sorry.
No, please.
I was just going to say, I think the competition is interesting because I don't think most of those movies really do compete with what He-Man was trying to do. The Digital Circus one, I extra don't like know very much about, but like, I feel like was Backrooms R-rated? Right. Yeah. Two R-rated horror movies are definitely not what I feel like you would be worried about here. I think the problem with He-Man, I do think the marketing for this movie, looking back at it, does a pretty bad job of just selling a fresh audience member on why He-Man is fun. Not just like why the He-Man toys are fun, but like, what is it about this story in this universe? And I think the movie has stuff in there that's like, it's a movie about believing in yourself and transforming like X-Men and Harry Potter and all this stuff. But the movie doesn't like the trip. Now the trailers really like hammer that in. It's just kind of like, I'm from Eternia. I have the power and get the sword. And then I fight this guy. But I don't know. I feel like if you're a let's say 13-year-old who's never heard of He-Man before, has probably seen Skeletor once or twice and other stuff. And then you see the trailer for this movie, I don't understand, outside of maybe being a huge fan of Nicholas Galitzine, which perhaps people are, and like, and being a fan of the director, who I also like, and I don't think is quite a name yet, but like, could
Stephen Knight, he's great.
Yeah, in the future, Travis Knight, yeah, but like the Bumblebee movie, if you saw that, you're like, oh man, this guy's the hotness. Then I'm gonna go watch whatever he makes. You know, maybe 5 years in the future, that's a thing. But yeah, I just feel like there was no hook for kids and new viewers. So you got all the adults and you got some of the adults, but like, I also just think this movie didn't have a big enough star. It was missing one big star, and it was Skeletor. And he was a big question mark man who didn't do any of the promotion for the movie, but like,
they should have cast Johnny Depp.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny Depp.
Or Jonathan Majors.
Yeah. And Idris Elba. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Idris Elba also in it, but not really featured in the marketing either. Elba, not like exactly an A-list guy. Yeah.
No, he does commercials for Gold now. Like, he carries Idris that Elba. Movie. And I think he's great in this movie, but I don't think he feels like a big movie star kind of guy. Honestly, like, I'm pretty sure I remember. I don't remember if this was a thing, but like, I think about this movie a lot because it's coming out later this year, is like the Street Fighter movie. With Noah Centineo, not even, you know, I mean, like, we'll see how similar the roles are. Both jacked guys who are probably in a similar age range. I think Noah Centineo brings an audience with him to this that Nicholas Galitzine just doesn't. And I think that may have helped this movie feel like a big deal, because I think that's what gets people to the theaters. Movies that feel like a big deal, whether it's people saying like, oh, this is Backrooms, this is the future of horror or whatever, or like this is the big movie of the month. This is, you know, He-Man. Mm-hmm. And I know, I think that's what they're trying to do really, really, really hard with Disclosure Day, is make it feel like a big deal, even though there's nothing in the movie or in the marketing that I feel like they've been, like, they've been having Steven Spielberg go look at things and go, this is my what from Indiana Jones. And it's like, this is just like this. This is important. So, yeah.
And
I know.
He's going on talk shows and saying aliens are real. I think that's about the
best. Yeah, and that, which is an insane thing. Yeah. They should have done that with this one. They should have said aliens and cats and big giant guys with fists are real. But they didn't.
Tommy, what were you going to say?
No, I pretty much just agree with that. I feel like this movie just didn't, for the budget and scope of how big this production was, it never felt like this was a must-see movie, even as a target, probably audience member, as a 42-year-old man. And I also think that 42-year-old men have like 12 to 13-year-old children usually. And it was a tough sell. And it's just much easier to see it on streaming now when you have all of these giant films coming out. And I think, you know, the co-produced by Amazon and Sony, right? This
Correct,
movie,
yeah.
It's like that's going to inflate the budget, and anything under it popping off to like $100 million this weekend is going to be probably reported as a failure. It obviously did bomb in a true sense, but I just feel like they struggled. They struggled to. I think it was in the marketing. They didn't focus on the guy playing He-Man as like he's the next big star either. It wasn't like it was kind of just like, yeah, look, we got this guy. He kind of looks like He-Man. And look, Idris Elba's in this movie. And, you know, look, the girl from Riverdale's in this movie. And Jared Leto's Skeletor, which we're kind of glossing over. And there's lots of other fun cameos or, you know, character people who you know their face. But you're right. There was just no magnet that was like, I got to see this movie.
Nicholas Gladstein didn't host SNL last week. He didn't go on Hot Ones. And, like, I think he could have. I mean, he couldn't have hosted SNL last week because it wasn't on. But, like, he could have done other stuff. And I don't think he didn't want to or anything. It just feels like maybe priorities-wise, they were like, we're going to kind of expect this isn't going to be as big of a movie for other reasons. I don't know. But this is why, like, I think if you had someone I had thrown out a bazillion names for this, but who's like just any other Skeletor actor, let's say Mark Hamill's an easy one because he's already done it, but also like he doesn't feel like a movie star. I'm just thinking somebody who is like
Glenn Powell, it doesn't matter, somebody like that.
Glenn Powell goes out to Skeletor, then also he does press for Skeletor, and it's like, oh, that's a movie star in that movie. That's a movie that I have to see.
And he can make jokes about how my face is like this the whole time, and you know,
Yeah, and he gets to go out and say, like, this is my Skeletor action figure I had when I was 10, and now I like having it because it's me. And, you know, I didn't see any of that. And it's weird.
I really hope.
And appeals to nostalgia in the marketing, too, but I don't think they had to do that much to appeal to nostalgia.
I just hope they don't learn the wrong lesson, which is, oh, this bombed. From now on, we'll just drop our Amazon movies on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Because the single best piece of marketing for a streaming, whatever, for a movie going on streaming is having it run in theaters for 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And what they can do, even if this movie breaks even, essentially what that will do is it pays for you making this movie that you can now put on your streaming service. So I hope they don't like take the bad box office as, oh, we won't do this again. No, really, you just got your movie made for free and a really good free marketing campaign for having it run in theaters for 4 weeks. So I hope that
not free because they get half the grosses to the theaters. But I think you're right. I mean, it was the same way with DVDs and Blu-rays when those were all the rage. The movie, they would basically break even on the big release of the movie, but then the money's afterwards, and, like you said, on the comeback.
And all movies are hurting because they have trained the audience to go, okay, there are several good movies out right now. This economy is shit. I can only afford to maybe go see one and take my whole family. Because that's another thing. This is a family movie. That's a really expensive night out to take your family.
And no popcorn bucket.
Yeah.
They had a popcorn bucket, didn't they?
They had popcorn buckets.
They did? Was it Battle Cat? I didn't get a popcorn bucket.
They have a Battle Cat, Skeletor, on a throne.
You could buy the sword and my theater. The sword I would have walked out with all of them.
Clearly, they had them all laid out on the counter at my theater. But no, it's just they have trained audiences that the movie's going to be on TV in 4 or 5 weeks. So we'll just wait and we'll watch it as a family and order some pizza, which, you know, sounds really appealing. So they're killing themselves by not having like a Didn't DVDs used to come out like 6 months after the movie was
out? VHS would be years sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. E.T., it took forever. So did Jurassic Park because they were still milking the theater.
It was almost an event when the DVD came out. It was like the movie was coming out all over
again. It literally was. Yeah. Because now also DVDs were packed with extras too that made it even more fun to go back and watch them. Sorry, Andrew, go ahead.
I was going to say, too, the other thing about movies and what they're trying to do now that this movie also didn't seem to do, and I'm looking backwards, I'm like, oh, this was a mistake. Because I do think one of, for me, the strengths of this movie, outside of a lot of the stuff that I like that are just like things that kind of are funny or whatever, design-wise, I think this movie had a pretty sick score, the Daniel Pemberton. Like, I feel like a lot of the times when a movie has a really good score, they advertise it as like the movie you have to see in Dolby sound system or whatever. And that's why all the movies now are not pretending, but are like, film this with IMAX. Like we filmed Mandalorian with IMAX, even if it's not going to look that great in IMAX, is because like that is something special that you can't get at home. And like, I feel like it's, looking back, it's crazy that I learned that Brian May did the guitars for this movie at the movie during the credits for the movie. Like that was not a selling point earlier in the movie. Cause like
It should have been
earlier in the releases. And he wasn't on TV talking about it. Like, I don't know, man, Amazon, they made Project Hail Mary. So they're doing great. And they're I'm sure they're having they've got some interesting stuff for the rest of the year, but I'll never understand some of these decisions.
So Colton, you made a good point. You talked about how people are being trained to not go to the theater anymore. And this is where something really interesting happened. I'm really proud of you. Something really interesting is happening too. And this is why, and I've made this about franchise fatigue. So let me bring this up. We got a little thing here, but I'll just read some of these grosses out to you. So we don't have numbers on this, but we're looking at like the highest grossing films of the 2010s. And they're pretty much the usual players, Avengers, et cetera, Frozen, all these franchises. In 2025, last year, we had some new ones hop in there, Demon Slayer, F1, things like that. However, I thought we had a slide of this one, but listen to like some of these Fast and the Furious. So the Fast and the Furious is one of the biggest franchises of all time. It doesn't feel that way, but it is. And it was on such a big increase from the fourth movie, and like when Justin Lin got on board and really started to make these movies. The fourth movie did 359. The fifth movie, which I think is the best in the franchise, did 629. Six did 789. Furious 7, fueled partly because of curiosity about Paul Walker dying, did $1.5 billion, which is fucking insane, considering it was a Point Break ripoff where they stole DVDs from a semi truck, DVD players.
Was that 2014, the seventh one?
Yeah. And then Fate of the Furious, the worst I've seen, is $1.1 billion. Hobbs and Shaw, which doesn't really count, 7.6, but they have decreased every single time. And these movies are really big and really expensive to make. And the same thing has happened with Mission Impossible, where Mission Impossible Fallout, which I think came out in not 2012, but like around the same time you're mentioning, Colton, 2017 maybe, did $786 million. And then Dead Reckoning Part 1, 565, and then hilariously titled The Final Reckoning, did 591. So it didn't even get, we'll never get Dead Reckoning Part 2. So then you're kind of looking at, you do see a line of these big franchises maybe getting stale for audiences because they know what to expect. You guys think it's that, or do you think it's the, well, I got this big shiny screen at home, I can see it there?
The reason I ask is like 2014, right in there, I would say going from like 2011 is probably when it started through that, through like 2018 might be the best time for movies ever in terms of theatrical box office. Like that, the amount of billion-dollar
2019, films I think you have to lump in there too.
You
had like Lion King that year, and
just a rapid incline from like the early 2010s up through, and then we hit that year where a certain thing happened, and we just we've recovered a little bit from it, but it really. That trained people to stay home as well and realize like, oh, well, I can just watch stuff here. Being
but it's
stuck
interesting
at home
because
the
last time in American history when that happened was with the Spanish flu, you know, from 1918 to the early 1920s. And obviously very different because back then you were wealthy if you had a radio in your hut or whatever Americans lived in back then. But now we've got this great home entertainment and streaming, you know, coincided with all of this happening. Whereas like in the late 1800s, when the Spanish flu was finally done, we got the roaring 20s afterwards. You know, we got people basically wanting to be out and doing more. That's when movies first exploded. So there was like an explosion of people who were in very public places with each other, and they wanted to be, you know, part of that camaraderie and seeing different things. And now I thought the same thing would happen after the pandemic, but you're right. It made us even more isolated than we were before.
And people just starting to, this is very anecdotal, but I have trouble finding people who really even watch that many movies, like in my day-to-day life. Like,
because of TV shows or because of
social media screens? Because of TV shows and this. And just, it's not, I don't know. It's like, it's not a thing anymore. Like, it's not a cool thing that people are interested in anymore. I know that's, you know, very broadly speaking, but.
Well, Marsha McLuhan, a great media analyst and philosopher, said the medium is the message. In other words, you know, if you really want to understand a society, you don't just look at what kinds of things they're consuming, because people in America, like cop shows and doctor shows, are always the most popular genre. You look at how they're consuming it, and that tells you more about a society. So a society that's more isolated from each other, lives a little bit more digitally, that's consuming things in, you know, 1 minute sections instead of like committing to like a long process, or who can't watch one thing at a time, you know, speaks to anxiety of a society because your screen is up and you're on this screen too, because you're afraid you're going to miss out on something. So there's a lot that's happening there. However, I still think He-Man was fun and people should have watched it.
I agree. And I also think that, like, I think that there is a bubble to this isolation too. Like, I think that there, think that the isolation that we live in now presents as like a simulated connectivity because of our smartphones. And I think that, like, it's like we're at a pain point with it in every area, not just media consumption. And it's like, yeah, but I'm not isolated because I can comment on a video, or I can text someone, or I can call them. And I think that, like, while it might feel painful for some of us right now, it certainly does feel painful for me. I do think that that will cause a yearning again for, like, literal connectivity or, like, in-person connectivity.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, like, movie theaters are dead. And I think that, like,
me either.
That is a sexy thing to put out in a tweet, and that might be a sexy video to make. But I think that, like, things are cyclical. And right now my generation became a generation that, like, raised themselves in adulthood on their devices and their phones. But I also see that, like, we are also able to look down at the next generation and see how it is affecting them and kind of be judgmental about it. Well, we're just as guilty. And I think that how that evolves is, like, there are kids now that don't want to be filmed. Like, you start to see kids rebelling against, like, they're like, I don't need to be online. Like, my nephew, and this is anecdotal, like Colton was saying before, like, he's anti-technology because of how pervasive it was in his childhood. He's 17 years old and he wants nothing to do with his phone. He wants nothing to do with
anything. Analog.
Right. And I think this is what happens. Bubbles blow up and blow up and blow up and seem like they'll never end. And then they burst. And my hope is that when that bubble bursts, people will return to the theaters. People will return to wanting to see each other in person. And, you know, I like to be optimistic. So maybe you could say that I'm dumb and AI is going to, you know, send me a message saying I need to disengage with that. But I don't know. I'm optimistic.
Well, to your point. OK, so movie theater attendance is down. Music is flourishing. Concerts are doing great. People are going out for that shared experience. It is interesting, though, going to concerts now as opposed to maybe a decade ago, because I think the kids are a lot more aware that they're always being filmed and nobody wants to get too silly. Nobody wants to, like, be a meme or become the next Star Wars kid. So everybody's a little bit more restricted, even in public. I've got some super chats here I want to get. There's a couple of really interesting ones in here I want to get everybody's thoughts on. Armand gave us £5 and said, I actually bought a cinema card this summer. So many good movies coming out so close to each other. It's just economical. Masters of the Universe was only okay, though. I don't think Masters of the Universe wasn't the next Barbie. It wasn't even the next Thunderbolts, but I still enjoyed the movie. Do you guys feel that way about the summer box office? What's coming up? Go ahead, Nando. What's your question?
Oh, I want to relate that to that. How does the movie theater subscription fit into box office anything? Like, how does that, because if I have a subscription to see four movies a month and I see Masters of the Universe four times, like, how does that, you know? I don't understand. I've never heard anybody explain.
My guess would be it could work like YouTube Premium, where you get paid based on how many YouTube Premium members watch your thing. My guess would be, you know how movie theaters take half the gross of the ticket up front, then it's like it grows over time. It's more than half. It gets to half. No, that's wrong. It starts at half or around there. My guess is they're paying the studio.
I would think they'd have to. That's a really great question, because like the AMC one, I forget what it's called, AMC Stubs or something.
Right?
That one, it pays. If you see more than like, I think they just upped their prices, but before they upped their prices, if you saw even like one movie, it already paid for itself. Now I think maybe it's like two.
That's just it. Yeah, that's what they do though. They get like every other technological thing. They loop you like in a gym. With a really low introductory. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like a gym.
Or like Uber or like anything else. Every startup starts you really low, so you'll forget about the subscription, which is why, honestly, I use Rocket Money. Rocket Money is great for, I speak an ad. I can't stop it. Every time I'm like right in the middle, someone's telling me their worst problem that's happened to them, I'm like, oh God, they should be in therapy. And I have just the recommendation for them. Sean Holtgray gave us $5 and said, Doug deserves a treat with my name on it. He actually sent that when I was talking about Doug not filling up the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And Sean, I will definitely give that to them. Thank you so much. And Christian Unpronounceable, longtime friend of the channel, gave us $5. Come on, people, drop those likes for one of your favorite streamers.
Aww.
Yeah, I mean, find your favorite streamer if they're streaming right now and drop them a like. And if it happens,
he meant us. He meant us, Ryan.
Impossible. Armand gave us another £5 and said, hi, young guy here, 20. I did not like this movie. It felt restrained. It's like Sonic 1. The villain was the best part, but Jared is not Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey Skeletor.
Jim Carrey Skeletor.
Jim Carrey Skeletor is honestly, how did they not do that?
Yeah, and that was, I feel like, a big part of why the Sonic movie felt big. It's because it was his return to like this. Like, I don't know if you could have gotten Mike Myers or something like that, but another comedian of that era who hasn't really done this in a while. Yeah, and you know, or even Adam Sandler, I think, could have done something. But just like, it needed to have that.
Jack Black.
It needed to be a moment. Sure. Oh, Jack
Don't
Black.
Give it to Jack Black's in too much shit. Sorry, no
he
veto.
A lot of
I use my
now,
screen crush veto.
I've got one.
Okay.
Robert Downey Jr.
why not?
I've got one.
And he's Robert a variant Schneider. Of Dune.
Oh my God.
And Skeletor, go woke, go broke.
My face looks like this from the vaccines.
It's like, I feel like we'll have a, and I, it's going to be, you know, I'm curious to see how this movie ages, because I don't think it's necessarily, I've heard a couple people call it the next Speed Racer. I don't think it's quite there, but I do think it's a movie that in a decade will get, like, people will look back on it and go, oh, that was a lot of fun. And it's weird that that bombed right next to this other thing that's now the biggest thing on earth.
Is there a chance?
Bill Hader.
He would have been great.
Is there a chance that this is going to fall in the same kind of category as that Dungeons and Dragons movie a few years ago?
Yeah.
That
was like so good.
Super fun and really
it was so
enjoyable.
Good. It should have started a franchise in a universe. You're right. Yeah. Sorry, Tom. Mm-hmm. It was Jesse Anthony.
Yeah. Sure.
Happy Zach Galifianakis. I don't know.
Melissa McCarthy.
Sold. Not even joking.
Yes.
Sold. I think the movie could have legs. I mean, it is just early June.
Yeah.
Kids are out for school.
True.
Maybe it'll have some legs. But I thought the same thing about Mandalorian and Grogu. It dropped 70%.
It dropped way worse than I thought it would. I think it dropped worse than Ant-Man Quantumania. I think Ant-Man Quantumania was like a 69%. Mm-hmm. And then this was at 74%, which shocked me. Maybe it was 82%.
Yeah,
it was bad.
It dropped 69.4% or something like that. I think Quantumania was like high 50s. Yeah, it was not good.
Yeah, it was really 60s. Bad.
Yeah.
No, it was higher than 50s, I think. But anyway, the Staz 2049 gave us $5 and said, this movie doesn't need to make $1 billion to be successful. It works for us Gen Xers. That's enough to be a success. Well, I think He-Man is a success in my heart. I'm sure Amazon would also like more of our money, too.
The tough part. It's like, how do you make a movie like this cheaper? You know, like, what is the budget version of this movie? It really kind of doesn't exist.
I think the budget version. Yeah, I think exactly. We saw the budget version of
it's in 1987. Yeah.
Oh, what was the budget on this movie?
Probably
50, maybe something like that.
Did it feel a little streamy? Felt like a streaming movie a little bit. Looked like a streaming movie.
Yeah. Reported production budget between 170 and 200 million because it needed to make around 2.5 times its budget to break even. The film's poor opening makes it one of the summer box office big flops.
Well, I bet Skeletor was.
According to Google AI Answer, which takes from the Wikipedia article right underneath it. I gotta turn that off.
Yeah. Idris Elba probably wasn't cheap, and all of the CG probably wasn't cheap. It's probably
there was a CG. Yeah, definitely the CG. Yeah. Dolph Lundgren's cameo, he probably paid them. Jordan Enrique gave us $5 and said a big family in front of me at the theater bought tickets to Scary Movie 6.
Mm.
And that's your target audience. No. Maybe it was Scary Movie 6 that stepped on the toes.
That came out this week. Okay.
Yeah.
I have no interest in that movie. I think a movie like
reviews. Hey, the first one was, the first two were funny and then amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Wayans brothers left. The
Zuckers. Yeah. I think this one is, I think a movie like Scary Movie gets people that don't normally go to the movies to go to the movie. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of teenagers might go see Scary Movie just because, like, and you know, they're loud throughout the movie and don't really even watch it. But,
oh my God, could you yell at the cloud louder, Colton? I'd go and I saw the teenagers there and they were being loud and I don't like it.
They're so, theater etiquette does not exist.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I'm making fun of you.
No,
I'm always the guy who finds an usher and complains like there's someone on their phone. You have to do something.
Dude, I was this, my wife stopped me. I was like, I'm going to lean over and ask them if they plan on talking the entire movie. And she was like, just go tell the usher. I'm like, fine.
I've done that so many times. I've yelled shut the fuck up in theaters before. I have absolutely been that guy. It's not a fun position to be in.
What about
Johnny Mashed Potatoes?
Have you ever had somebody try to talk to you that you're with and you'd have to be like,
oh yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Stop talking.
No, but seriously.
Shut up.
And we used to see a lot of theater too, and like that would you bring in visitors from out of town. You're like,
I said that to my nephew. He kept asking me questions on a movie, and by like the fourth time, like at first I was like, you gotta whisper, buddy. The fourth time I'm like, stop talking.
Yeah. I mean, with kids, it's different. I mean, I don't know. With a kid, like especially in a kid's movie, if you go see Finding Dory is probably the last time I was in a movie, and I was like, wow, there's children in this room.
They get a pass.
You know,
I will say one of my core memories as a child was my father taking a full phone call in the early origin days of cell phones during a screening of The Santa Claus with Tim Allen. He took a complete cellular phone call on a massive brick style cell phone.
In 1995, He probably had an antenna with him too.
He did. It was insanity. And nobody batted an eyelash because I think they were all dazzled that a man had this contraption in the theater. But it was, I'll never forget the embarrassment that I felt over.
Johnny Mashed Potatoes gave us $2 and said Jared Leto strikes again. He really is. He's worse box office poison than Carrot Top, to quote
Mark. Does he have other stuff in the future that we can bet against somehow or something?
Yeah,
like
let's
that?
Get on those predictive markets.
What's the rest of his because he's so and I feel like eventually it's one of those things where it's gonna take time for the kind of producers to react to this. So I can see why there's a couple of years of this happening, but eventually it's gotta burst, right? Well,
if you want to bet like that, Polymarket offers a great
That's the one. Yeah.
They've got to do
one of those. Long story.
They've got to do a Three Jokers film adaptation and bring or a Batman No Way Home. Do Batman.
That is the worst Batman. I hate that story. Anyways, Operation Spider gave us $5 Australian and said, with He-Man flopping, what does this mean for other 1990s IP or 1900s IP? Not 1990s.
Oh, God.
He actually wrote 1900s IP. So basically for the Al Jolson movie that all the kids are looking forward to as well, the entire century, I'm looking forward to the supposed Power Rangers reboot, but I doubt if it's, how many reboots of the Power Rangers have we gotten at this point? But the franchise still goes, even though they're not,
It's a TV show.
Do you think there's anything from the 1900s that can really go and would have legs in an adaptation?
It's a question of what, because I ask this question a lot about Harry Potter, is do kids now, does a 10-year-old now know what Harry Potter is and care? And it's that with Power Rangers, and it's that with, like, yeah. It could be that with Spider-Man. The answer to Spider-Man is yes, because they keep making cartoons and the movies keep kind of hitting. But like with
Barbie's generational as well.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of like that. And that's why with this one, I kind of see how where the gap was, where people just weren't really thinking about Masters of the Universe very much. But
for 40 years.
Yeah. I don't know. Like Transformers, can Transformers get back there? Because they're kind of, you know, Ninja Turtles, they're kind of that last movie.
But when Transformers came out in 2005, that was only 20 years after their heyday in the 80s. And we had, you know, Beast Wars and some other shows that were less successful. But that franchise had, I'm telling you, like He-Man Toys, there's a great document, an episode of The Toys That Made Us about this. They just overnight dropped off a cliff. Like I remember even as a kid being like, I'm good. And it was crazy how that happened.
I feel like this movie came out, like, I don't know, 5-10 years too late, because we've moved on to 90s is the nostalgia film now. That's where they're going, because we had that little trend where, you know, they were pulling from 80s stuff, but now we're kind
it's
of
usually
in the
90s. Every 20 years fashion is in 20 year cycles.
Like Ryan, you're the target demo for that. I mean, right, because you're well, like mid-40s, right? Like
I'm the He-Man. They made the trailer for me. It said, so watch this, Ryan, at the end of it, 100%.
You know what? What I want to see is a, like, Seven-style cop thriller about a criminal profiler that has to find a serial killer amongst a diverse crowd of people, a la Guess Who, the game. And he just has down. And then at the end, there's just a guy standing like in Times Square sipping a Diet Coke, eating a hot dog. And he's like, you're Tom. And then,
but you laugh, but this, okay. So this keeps happening in Hollywood though, because there was going to be a Monopoly movie made by Ridley Scott around the time they made Battleship. Right. There was going to be, give me a second. Let's see. The other franchise they were developing for a little bit, they were diving headlong into 80s stuff. In the 90s, it was remakes of TV shows from the 50s for some reason. Beverly Hillbillies, right. And the Brady Bunch. Like, Bewitched. That's when they were doing all of that. Bewitched, right? So that was a big thing for a little bit. It really is. Somebody does it successful, everybody else hops on board. And I think He-Man, in part because it's also Mattel, is people going, oh, well, what other toys and properties are there? And this is a big sign that it won't keep going.
A Monopoly movie would be brilliant. You could do like Wolf of Wall Street, like Moneyball type of movie with Monopoly.
The thing they were going to do, they went into Monopoly World. It was actually a little bit like what we got with Barbie, I believe. But yeah, Ridley Scott.
That works for Barbie.
Yeah.
I would like to have seen an Oliver Stone Monopoly movie. That would be
conspiracies.
Truly
Mike,
Park Place is owned by the Saudis. Follow the oil money.
Mike Ishku gave us about $3 Canadian and said Leto felt like the worst part and the dialogue. I mean, again, I like Leto in the movie, but
I thought Skeletor was the best part of the movie.
See, Skeletor's tough though, because I do think he feels like out of all of the characters, the most Whedon-y character, where he is the character who's like, I'm doing a monologue now. You guys should laugh at my monologue. And I still do find those bits entertaining, but I don't necessarily think he fit with what like Alison Brie was doing, which I do think I like more. And like I think that really, really on target campy version of Evelyn feels like it's in a different, like, I don't know, it's a different space. But you know, I also think anybody else could have done that Skeletor. That's my last kind of you give anybody with charisma that role and they'll get you something as good as that, because it's Skeletor. He's like so entertaining and weird.
Any voice actor really could have
probably done.
And shout out the script then, because we're all praising Skeletor and we're saying it's in spite of Jared Leto.
Ryan, I am shocked by the lack of Alison Brie commentary from you.
I love Alison Brie, man. She's great. Loved her in Community. Had the biggest crush on her. I think she's just great in this movie. She can do anything. Glow deserved a fifth season. That was her prestige drama. And I think if they have to recast She-Hulk, it should be her. I think she's fantastic.
Oh, that would be something. Yeah.
Apparently, we walked by her in an airport once and I didn't see her. And I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Anyways, Q-Man WPG gave us 10 Canadian dollars. This will be our last super chat, I think. Well, I thought Masters of the Universe was okay, Leto being my favorite part. I feel the franchise recognition also played a part. Could there be another Mattel franchise they could mash it up with for a potential sequel?
Well, why'd they call it Masters of the Universe? Why didn't they call it He-Man? Nobody knows what the fuck Masters of the Universe is.
Because the show was called He-Man and the it's fine. It's a long story. But yeah, I do think valid point.
Why does the show not just called He-Man? Like, He-Man's clearly the guy. I feel like there's something connected to the idea of He-Man that is unpalatable to people. But I mean, it's still better than calling Masters of the Universe. But yeah, they asked about other Mattel properties that could do this.
Yeah, or just whatever. Yeah, I mean, you can expand past that.
You know what Kenner. Would have been cool is, you know, you do the Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Masters of the Universe. But I think Transformers and G.I. Joe, that's Hasbro, right? And then you have Mattel. Yeah, so
they were going to do a crossover for a long time. That was the plan, I think.
Right.
You could do an Avengers kind of movie. Have He-Man be the Thor. You bring in Snake Eyes. You bring in Bumblebee. And which one of the Turtles? Maybe Michelangelo. Oh, God. I'm getting really excited. I mean, bring in a Power Ranger, too.
Looking at a list of now, if I had to call some of these, I'm like, okay, this is a movie this could be a movie. American Girl Doll, that's owned by Mattel. That could be a movie. It's not one I would necessarily watch.
And the movie rights are owned by a lot of them by Paramount that you just named too. I think they have Ninja Turtles and Transformers and G.I. Joe. So
That's interesting. That.
Yeah. And also, I mean, if it goes through, Warner Brothers and Paramount, same thing. Yeah. Warner Brothers has Barbie. I mean, but the thing is, my whole point is I think people don't give a shit about that kind of thing anymore. I think even like in terms of the MCU, the only reason the big crossover movies worked is because we enjoyed the previous movies and we were eager to see these people who we liked interact. And somewhere along the line, I kind of feel like that got shuffled away, not just with the MCU, but with a lot of these, you know, Fast and the Furious jumping the shark, AKA the nuclear submarine in the Arctic. But anyways, I could go on, but we should probably wrap it up there.
American Girl Dolls should be a horror movie.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed in that subgenre as well. The Blood and Honeys and stuff like that not being any good. That's a fun idea.
Those are trash. But
Peter Pan is like ripe for it.
Last thought on the Mattel stuff, because I'm not surprised, because I'm sure they've been working on this for a while, like a He-Man movie. I feel like for me, the obvious move was this is the movie you put Ken in. Have Ken travel to the He-Man universe and learn about masculinity from the other toys that are that.
Yeah.
And that's your kind of, here's a movie star, here's an event. Like, that's what this movie was lacking. It's a different movie, but I feel like there's something there that, you know, we'll see what they end up doing with those. Because I'm sure they want to spin Barbie in other directions so they can get the most out of that. And
I'm sure never can, because I don't think anyone in that cast will do it. Unless it's a different Ken. Like, I can see that.
They have been trying to make this movie forever. Didn't Kevin Smith, pen a script for this or something?
Well, he did the Netflix series,
But
other people have over the years, too. And since the 20s. I remember reading about this in Wizard Magazine, like in the 2000s, they were trying to get this done. And I think instead what we're going to get, instead of like a big sprawling Masters of the Universe cinematic universe, what we're likely going to get is something She-Ra. More like Before Time. We're going to get She-Ra no matter what. I think they're going to, if they do another big screen release, they're going to bear and call it He-Man and She-Ra. And that'll be the name of it. The Secret of the Sword, which is their first TV movie. But I think instead it's going to go the way of, say what?
He-Man and She-Ra, Quantumania.
There you go. He-Man and She-Ra, they don't know their brother and sister, so they might kiss. Get that crowd. But anyways.
Do well in middle America.
Yeah. My people. D.D. Hay gave us 24 euros and said, talking about Hasbro, Magic the Gathering could have been the project. By the way, any Easter eggs in the Marvel edition coming out?
Have you guys seen those cards? Edition. They're very funny. There's I'm not a big Magic guy, but Magic is doing its like, I think it's called like World Beyond World or something, where they kind of have different universes. And there's apparently a Sauron card, Sauron the Lizard Man, that either heals you by curing cancer or turns one of the guys in your card like set into a dinosaur. So like that's the kind of level of weird. The one thing about it is there's very few X-Men, so I do feel like they're saving a lot of the X-Men for later, which will be the most exciting one. But People seem to have fun with these. Like, I'm not a big Magic guy, but there have been some cool things. And isn't there a Magic movie coming out? I want to say the guy from front of the band, the show, the movie is working on it. Like
magic was always when that became the thing. I remember, and I was in high school, and I that's when I watched it, and I watched my friends doing it, and I said, I think I'm good. I think that's the part of fandom that I'm going to leave over there. And it's no shade to anybody who does it. It's huge, and it kept comic books of shops afloat for years with magic tournaments. So, but my expertise in that is like, it's a giant gaping black hole. Guys, we got to wrap it up. I can do this all day. But Nando, sure. You can find him on the Mostly Nitpicking podcast or on his channel, which is linked below. Matt, so good to see you. Please come on again.
We'd love
to
have you. Too. Yeah.
Appreciate
absolutely.
You.
Hopefully
you later.
Non-bomb in the future.
Hopefully for a what?
A non-bomb,
a movie that is successful and cool.
We would love it. Come on anytime. Yeah. We do this just about every day. See you later. And oh shit, Tommy. Oh my God.
Oh my God. Janet, get your hands off my nunchucks. I got to go, guys. I'm so sorry.
See you later. And Colton, of course, you can find him here on the channel or his own channel, which is linked below.
That's the crescendo.
And talk to you later. We want to hear from you guys. Let me know your thoughts on the movie down in the comments below, or you can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, or our free-to-join Discord server, or find me on Substack. That'd be a huge help. And if it's your first time here, please subscribe, smash that bell for alerts, and don't forget to check out our Masters of the Universe t-shirts that we have at our merch store right now, which are linked below. We have the Gray Skull Gem in the style of Gold's Gem, and of course, the I Have the Power for Screen Crush. I'm Ryan Airy.